buckle up. It's showtime.
My fellow Americans, I've always wanted to say that. But seriously, this conference brought to you by the letters S and M. Now, Elmo here to announce his official retirement from Sesame Street. There are many different reasons for this, but mainly just because Elmo wants to spend more time playing golf, doing Sudoku, and just having a good time. Maybe even branch out and have a movie career. Okay, I'm opening up the floor to questions now.
Right here, Elmo. Right here. To the left. Back left, Elmo. Thank you, Elmo. Pleasure to be here. Now, what are your feelings on the scandal?
Oh, no, it's okay. Elmo answered. Elmo loves scandals. They come in all sorts of pretty colors, like red, purple, yellow. Then when you light them, they smell so good, like vanilla, cinnamon, lavender. Oh, they're so nice.
I think you thought I said candles.
Yeah, Elmo, no, that's what Elmo's talking about. Next question.
Elmo, are you gay?
Oh, yes. Everyone on Sesame Street gay. We all try to make people happy all the time.
Elmo, how do you explain the unknown individual in the affair claiming at first to be 16, then later 23, and now 16 again?
Elmo also have trouble counting sometimes. 1, 2, 3, 16, 23, 16. Next.
Tell me, Elmo, have you ever asked a boy to touch you?
Oh, sure. Elmo got kids to touch him all the time. Tickle Me Elmo, the most popular toy in the world.
How have your cast members reacted to the scandal?
Oh, well, Bert and Ernie, they run away to Mexico till the whole thing died down. Lynn did not hear about it at all. But Big Bird gave Elmo great advice. He said, stand tall.
Elmo, what do you think of your latest accuser coming forward?
Oh, well, pretty soon Elmo's piggy bank gonna be empty from all the money he has to pay out to people to be quiet.
Well, thank you so much. No more questions, please, at this time.
Elmo's gonna sing goodbye song now. Innocent, innocent, Elmo's innocent. That guy was above the age of legal life consent. Bye-bye.
Come on. Thank you.
You know my sick, demented mind. I wanted to play that all day. 2 minutes after the hour, right here on Reese on the Radio. We are back after the devastating loss, 16-17, by the New York Giants against the Redskins. Yes, Mary's not here now, but trust me, when she gets back, she is not going to be a happy camper. So do not talk about football to her. Do not mention it. Do not even bother to mention it. If you bring it up, you will just get her angry. Then I have to put up with it for the rest of the night. So I'd appreciate it if you didn't do it. Okay? Thank you. It's December the 4th, 2012, just 1 month away from our one-year anniversary. Speaking of devil, right here on Reese on Radio on blogtalkradio.com. Plenty of news and views to get into today. Trust me when I say that there is everything going on in the news today. Of course, finally there is backlash. There's enough backlash to finally make Bob Costas open up his mouth and respond to the ridiculous claims that he made on Sunday Night Football in a game with the Dallas Cowboys versus the Philadelphia Eagles, where he talked about the shooting, the murder-suicide involving Javon Belcher and his girlfriend, Cassandra Perkins. For those of you who are living under a rock, here's that audio now.
You want some actual perspective on this? Well, a bit of it comes from the Kansas City-based writer Jason Whitlock, with whom I do not always agree, but who today said it so well that we may as well just quote or paraphrase from the end of his article. Our current gun culture, Whitlock wrote, ensures that more and more domestic disputes will end in the ultimate tragedy, and that more convenience store confrontations over loud music coming from a car will leave more teenage boys bloodied and dead. Handguns do not enhance our safety. They exacerbate our flaws, tempt us to escalate arguments, and bait us into embracing confrontation rather than avoiding it. In the coming days, Javon Belcher's actions and their possible connection to football will be analyzed. Who knows? But here, wrote Jason Whitlock, is what I believe. If Javon Belcher didn't possess a gun, he and Cassandra Perkins would both be alive today.
Therefore suggesting that Javon Belcher only needed a gun. They only needed a gun. The fact that he had a gun, if there was no gun, nobody would have died. And he's finally responded, Bob Costas, saying that he shouldn't have left it to so much, so open for conversation. There are plenty of things he should have said. He did. He in no way is against or in favor of taking away people's Second Amendment right, which we know is bogus. And what made it even worse, probably what made it even more laughable, was that it was reported today on Breitbart.com that Bob Costas, when he goes to and leaves these events, he goes to them with armed security. Much like other sportscasters, I know Troy Aikman goes, I know that Jim Nantz from CBS, I know that some of these big names, they always walk around with security because they're around rowdy fans. You know, rowdy fans, maybe they're in town, somebody doesn't like them, hates their broadcasting mannerisms. They're often, you know, I wouldn't use the word accosted, but they're normally harassed. I'm sure Bob Costas is often harassed. You got a drunk guy at a football game, may not like Bob Costas, and he's got security around him, guys with guns. So here it is, he's talking about, oh, if no gun was involved, these two people would be alive today. Well, would he say that in the event that somebody tried to attack him at a football game? Let's say it's at the Dallas game. Let's say Dallas loses the game. Guy's drunk, he's irate, he's sick and tired of Dallas never ever getting to the playoffs, if not making a second round of the playoffs and going to the Super Bowl. See, Bob Costas wants to take it out on him. Gets into an altercation, somebody pulls out a gun. Blow! Would he say that man would be alive today if his security detail didn't have a gun? Would he say that then? Probably not. There would be no argument. The argument would be that security officer did what he had to do. He had to protect the lives of Bob Costas and others who may have been in harm's way. That would have been their excuse. Real sanctimonious. And it's true. It's typical. Everybody knows that this is typical. So everyone is now talking about Bob Costas and his, I don't know, is it an apology? I don't know. I couldn't say that it's an apology. I can say that he's obviously embarrassed that he didn't get the support that he hoped he will. Although he did get some from the likes of the Washington Post. But what do you expect from those knuckleheads? Washington Post, they loved him. Huffington Post, they loved him. But that's not enough because nobody reads the Washington Post anymore. And the Huffington Post is a joke. So when reputable news organizations like Fox and Breitbart and Brent Bozell, those folks over at Newsbusters and MRC TV, when they get at you, they're getting at you. So he had no choice. He forgot that there are a slew of Americans out there, who own guns and believe in the right of ownership of guns. And he thought he was talking to his little Today Show friends. That's who he thought he was talking to. He thought he was in kind company. Think about this, folks. Let's show you how stupid Bob Costas is. Bob Costas rated programs on Sunday night in Dallas, covering a Dallas-Philadelphia game in Dallas. What do you think the viewership in Dallas was? On a Sunday night game? Prime time? And Texas? Those gun totems? Spew that. I mean, do it during the, I don't know, San Diego versus Oakland game in San Diego. Or as Ron Burgundy would say, San Diego. You do that then. Not in Dallas. But of course the backlash was swift. And they had no choice. NBC again caught with egg on its face. Spewing rhetoric. I mean, what's it going to take, folks? What's it going to take for NBC to realize that they're a joke? NBC. They're a joke.
Well, what did Bob Cox say? Did he track himself back?
Well, he just said that he didn't, you know, he didn't, he should have, you know, he should have thought before he spoke.
Well, that generally helps.
And, you know, he knows.
Especially when you're speaking to the public.
Yeah, exactly. But he thought that he's on NBC. He knows that everybody there at NBC probably agrees with him, but he's forgetting the audience. This is another classic case.
The NFL fans?
No. Hold on.
No. But the audience, NFL fans?
No.
Are gun-toting people.
I know that. I'm saying that his audience, what he thinks his audience is, are the people that are in the studio at NBC. This is another classic elitist case of NBC and other places who have a tendency to believe that everybody thinks like them. It's a very elitist approach. Americans aren't smart enough to know better. So it takes a guy like Bob Costas, an award-winning journalist, who knows better than you and I, to tell you to put down your guns. Put down your guns. Don't own a gun. Put your gun down. I know better. I don't carry a gun. That's because I got six big niggas around me when I leave the stadium.
And they got guns.
And they got guns. I don't need a gun. NBC pays for five niggas to surround me. That's what he's thinking. And you shouldn't have a gun near you unless you can afford five niggas to surround you with guns. That's what it is. And I just love, you know, you look at the way that he's posturing when he's telling you. You know, just shut your face. Julie says NBC stands for nobody cares. Oh, it's just disgusting. Speaking of, I do want to bring this up. Now, Jason Whitlock, who many of you may know, is also getting some backlash about his comments.
Well, he's the one that has it.
Well, he started it off. Exactly. He's running in fear. That clown is running in fear. He's being asked to be interviewed about his comments about the KKK, and now he's running in fear. Well, the NRA and the KKK. But now he's scared. He doesn't want to be challenged for his comments because he knows he looks like a moron. I hear Bill O'Reilly tried to get him on The Factor. He punked out like a real punk. You know, you go somewhere and you show up on Roly Poly Martin's show, his podcast, and you spew that NRA is equal to the KKK rhetoric. But then when you get real journalists asking you to talk about what you said and to challenge you, you decline.
sports gets so much attention and so many people tune out the real world that I try to take advantage of the opportunities to talk about the real world when sports lends itself to that and try to open people's eyes. I did not go as far as I would like to go because my thoughts on the NRA and America's gun culture, I believe the NRA is the new KKK.
Wow.
And that the arming of so many black youth and loading up our communities with drugs and then just having an open shooting gallery is the work of people that, you know, obviously don't have our best interest.
They don't have our best interest.
Is the work of people who have making our neighborhoods into a shooting gallery. No, the NRA is not making your neighborhood into a shooting gallery. The people in your neighborhood are making your neighborhood into a shooting gallery, you freaking idiot.
It's the classic case of, you know, blaming others and not letting making others take responsibility. You know my favorite part of that interview.
Wow.
The little nigger bitch in the back. NRA is like the KKK.
Wow.
Shut up, bitch. Just shut
up. She's probably saying wow because she can't say anything else. She's probably just as stunned as everybody else was when Aaron did.
No, she's agreeing with him. Wow. That's all she's saying. She's saying wow. She said nobody challenged him in that room. Nobody challenged him.
Wow.
Deep.
Yeah, exactly. Wow. How deep. How profound. How prolific.
Wow.
Loser, bitch.
Turning our neighborhoods into shooting galleries. Get a freaking grip, you idiot.
That's why I'm ripping on her. Let's go to White Mike in the open monologue. Hello, Mike.
Oh, man. You know, Bob Costas said some fairly racist stuff in the beginning that it seemed to get by everybody. He said that the gun culture in the players' locker room. Why doesn't he just say Negroes can't have guns responsibly?
Oh, exactly. Why
because
not?
Straight up, man, I guarantee you more Major League Baseball players and hockey players own guns than NFL players do. And they're not shooting people up.
That's stuck out of my mind as well.
You know, I mean, and you know why? Because NHL players and Major League Baseball players are minority black. And there's a difference between responsible gun culture, the gun culture I grew up with and Sally grew up with. Shit, I'll even say Edward grew up with. I know Edward's a big gun owner. Yeah. And then, you know, who was the idiot that shot himself in the leg in New York, dropped his Glock out of the set?
Stop talking about my Giants, okay?
Oh, no. But he makes a valid point here. A responsible gun owner, and that's interesting because Plaxico Burress was a licensed gun carrier. He just wasn't licensed in New York City because he lived in New Jersey.
You can't carry in New York
City. Well, that's – no. There are plenty of people in New York who have a concealed carry. Howard Stern does, and so does Don Imus. They both do.
But you cannot carry into a place – even if you have a concealed weapons permit, you cannot carry into a place that serves alcohol or into a school. You cannot.
Well, that's a fact. But what I'm saying is that Don Imus and Howard Stern both walk to their jobs. They both have concealed carry permits. So does Mark Anthony has one as well, the Latino salsa singer. Yeah, a lot of people have those. But Plaxico Burress, what's even more interesting, and you use the word responsible gun owners, Plaxico Burress had that gun on him while he was wearing a pair of sweatpants, and the gun was inside of his in his waistband, which was nothing more than a pull string. Yeah.
Now, look, man, there are firearms that you can carry in your waistband safely. They call that a Mexican carry. It's not racist. It's how the Mexican banditos carry their gun tucked in their waistband. Right. You can carry a double-action revolver that way. You can carry a double-action automatic pistol that way. You can carry one with a safety that way. But you cannot carry a Glock that way.
Right.
Because Glock has what's called a safe-action trigger, where there's a little bar on the face of the trigger. It has to be depressed in order to let the trigger pull. And it's great unless you carry it where something gets stuck in that trigger guard. It'll go off.
Right.
So, I mean, I have a gun I carry in my waistband with no holster, but it ain't going to go bang until I pull the trigger. Anybody who carries a Glock like that is a flipping moron.
which goes right back to the whole idea of being responsible. That's why you see these things. Now, what I find alarming about this is as more and more reports come out about Javon Belcher, I mean, This guy was, I mean, look, we want to talk about sick and morbid. The story that came out today, that more detail and more details that did come out today say that, you know, he shot this woman 9 times. His mother runs out of her of his bedroom to the bathroom where he shot her. And then when she comes in, she sees him kneeling down saying, "I'm sorry, baby," kissing her on the forehead.
Do you know why people like me have firearms?
To protect yourself from
like Devon Belcher.
What's that?
Because of guys like him.
Yes, exactly.
And guys like Trayvon Martin. You know, I'm not going to fight some. How big was this Belcher guy? He's a monster.
He forget about it. He was 200 and... Yeah. I mean, he had to be 250, maybe 60 pounds over 6 feet tall. The guy's a linebacker for crying out loud.
What am I going to do if that guy meets me at the ATM and wants to kick my ass? I'm going to fight him?
Yeah, exactly.
Dude, I'm not Mayhem Miller. I'm not going to fight that guy. I'm going to shoot him, preferably with a caliber that starts with a 4.
And then, you know, that's the thing that people don't understand about this Belcher guy. Now that people are learning more and more about his background, and, you know, we played the audio of that guy from West Babylon who said that, you know, he was a terror when he was in high school. But now this other roommate has come forward, talked about how he harassed another ex-girlfriend the same way that he had issues with women. He was very misogynistic and kind of an asshole. I mean, to put it bluntly, you know, and this wasn't
an isolated.
Yeah, this wasn't isolated. You know, they tried to.
He was a jerk. He was a big bully jerk who got everything handed to him in life. Because he got the right genetic combination.
Yeah, and it was pretty clear that he never really, you know, he never really appreciated anything that he got. And the moment that he actually showed appreciation for anything.
He killed himself.
Is the moment that he killed himself. He goes, I mean, and think above all the people that he could have said something to. His mother. Maybe his other family members.
What was he going to say to his mother after he shot and killed his
mom? Mom, thank you for trying to raise me to be a good boy. Blah. No, the only person he went to, he goes down to the practice facility because those are the only people who pretty much gave him what he would
material things.
Yeah, material things. Things that meant nothing.
Opportunity to make money to get material things.
He didn't even say goodbye to his mother. He just jetted off. After he shoots his girlfriend, he jets off, leaves his mother there with his 3-month-old child. This was a selfish son of a bitch.
Well, dude, look at the culture of entitlement the NFL perpetuates. I mean, I don't want to rag on Michael Vick, but let's look at Michael Vick.
Right.
You know, if Michael Vick had been Michael Vick the burger flipper, he wouldn't be having a job at McDonald's with that conviction.
Oh, absolutely not.
No way. But he gets to not just a dog killer, but he was a goddamn organized crime ringleader.
What I found alarming.
Now he's playing and he's a millionaire again.
What I found alarming about
well,
the Michael.
Well, look at the. But you know what? That happens everywhere when you know people or your name is somebody, when you have some notoriety somewhere. Because look at the politicians, for Christ's sake. Look at them, too. They're, you know, getting voted that you get caught smoking crack with a prostitute in your room. Oh, don't worry about it. We're going to vote you right back in. We like you. We're really going to vote for you now.
You kept it real.
You know, all the other, the one that, you know, was arrested for child molestation, or not child molestation, but statutory rape, he's going to run again. He'll probably win. You know, the other idiot that had all the felonies for writing bad checks and all that stuff. They voted his dumbass back in Detroit or something.
Yeah.
You know? So it's everywhere when you're in a status quo position.
Well, wait, you know what? This is – it's funny about this culture that's so right on point to what you're saying, Mary, is Whoopi Goldberg is a perfect example in 2 separate cases because you brought up Michael Vick, White Mike. When Michael Vick was dealing with the whole the dog fighting thing, Whoopi Goldberg tried to suggest on The View of all places that this was an isolated incident because this is what blacks do. So, and I looked at that in the grand scheme of things, and I was like, so blacks not only fight dogs, but when the dogs lose, he then electrocutes them and shoots them in the head. That's a black thing. So
well,
you don't understand that culture. So in essence, that's to say...
She obviously ain't been in no Mexican neighborhood.
Right.
They fight dogs, chickens, frogs,
right.
Anything.
But then, and then she says about Roman Polanski. She says Roman Polanski, when he was on the run, remember when he almost got caught in Switzerland and they had him on house arrest? She says on The View, again, she says Roman Polanski, you know, was charged with rape, but it wasn't rape. I swear she said that.
Well, you know, every culture has the lower you are on the socioeconomic strata, you fight different creatures.
Right.
Mexicans are at the bottom, so they fight chickens. Blacks are a little ahead of the Mexicans, so they fight dogs.
Not anymore.
And whites are on top of things, so we fight blacks and Mexicans.
Edward, jump in here. Edward in Connecticut's on the line.
Hey, what's going on? I just didn't catch the beginning of the show.
You didn't catch the beginning?
Yeah, I just joined in about 10 minutes ago.
Oh, no. We're getting into this whole Bob Costas finally responding, giving a half-hearted apology, saying that, you know, he didn't mean to leave it so open to conversation. I guess he's saying he should have chosen his words wisely before
he
spoke.
Thought before he
spoke, pretty much.
Which is 9 times out of 10 what you should do when you're live on air, moron.
Well,
I mean,
Bob Costas to walk through Bed-Stuy by himself at night without his bodyguards.
Yeah, there you go.
With his 5'2" Greek wig wearing ass.
Go ahead, Edward. What did you say?
You know, that was something that was really meant to be on the an Oprah Winfrey show or The View or something like that. That was not meant for, you know, a football audience.
Oh, absolutely not. And you're absolutely right. It was
but now
exactly.
Are fans going to have the balls to boycott NBC because of this? Are people going to say they're not going to watch NBC football because Bob Costas is an anti-American asshole?
I don't think
football's not going to respond, but you know what they're going to say from now on? It's, you know, Bob Costas, when it comes to stuff like this and political commentary, keep your goddamn mouth shut. Talk about football. That's all you have to do. Talk about football. You want to talk about the dynamics of football or sport or whatever it is? Keep it to that. You start talking about gun rights or gun culture, shut your face. NBC may have been happy about him saying it the first time around, but I'm sure they tapped him on the back and just said, all right, listen, look, you didn't win this one. You're going to get your ass reamed really, really hard. Say something publicly next time around, just be quiet. You know, that's probably the best thing to do. Let's just not go there. You know, because they're getting their ass handed to them every time you turn around. And, of course, case in point is when we come back, we're going to talk about the George Zimmerman case with the new photos that came out. And, of course, the backlash at finding out that the district attorney's office released a black and white photo of George Zimmerman when he was taken inside the police car. Now this new photo has come out. And I want to get Sal on the line because he wrote this very, very long message on Facebook. I didn't get a chance to read it, but I want to get into that with him when we come back. So stick around. We'll be right back right here on Reese on the Radio. George Zimmerman, the new revelations. When we get back.
News Busted. I'm Jody Miller. Let's get started. Inside sources say Hillary Clinton prefers John Kerry succeed her as Secretary of State over Susan Rice. So it's official. Hillary Clinton is a sexist and a racist. President Obama wants congressional Republicans to raise taxes now with the promise that he'll cut spending later. Yeah, sure. Just like he promised to reduce unemployment, cut our national debt in half, and close Guantanamo Bay. It's been reported that Senate GOP leader Mitch McConnell burst into laughter after hearing Tim Geithner's proposal to raise taxes. At the same time, the average taxpayer burst into tears. Vice President Biden visited a Costco store as payback that for the Costco founder's support during the presidential campaign. And Biden also plans to stop by the Muslim Brotherhood holiday party later this month. Former NBC network president Jeff Zucker will become head of CNN. Obviously, Zucker was chosen by CNN because of all his experience with fiction and comedy. President Obama had Mitt Romney to the White House for a private lunch. And as usual, President Obama ran up a huge tab and left it for our kids to pay. Friends say Lindsay Lohan is drinking up to 2 liters of vodka a day, or, as Gary Busey calls it, breakfast. And finally, the U.S. government may get rid of the $1 bill, although the idea does have its opponents, namely every stripper in America. Thanks for watching News Update, everybody. I'm Jody Miller. Be sure to subscribe to our videos on YouTube, and we'll catch you next time.
Never-before-seen evidence collected by police that fateful night. Here, clear pictures of George Zimmerman taken at the police station just hours after he shot Trayvon Martin. You can see what appears to be a swollen nose, the back of his head cut and bleeding. And in this newly released document, an officer on the scene notes Zimmerman's nose appeared to be broken. And look at this grainy photo, taken as Zimmerman was sitting in the police car just moments after the shooting. There, too, his nose seems swollen. A doctor report first obtained by ABC News reveals it was broken. Also released tonight, a chilling image of the gun Zimmerman used to kill the unarmed Trayvon Martin. Today's documents show a police officer called the shooting, quote, avoidable, had Zimmerman, quote, remained in his vehicle and awaited the arrival of law enforcement.
Are you following him?
Yeah.
Okay, we don't need you to do that.
Okay.
It's one reason, a source tells ABC News, police doubted Zimmerman's claim of self-defense that night and filed this recommendation for his arrest. What remains a black hole here is what triggered that conflict between Trayvon Martin and Zimmerman that night. Of course, that will be much debated in the courtroom behind me when this trial finally gets underway. Diane?
As he said, poring over this new evidence, Matt Gutman thanks Matt.
We're back at Teresa on the Radio, 36 minutes after the hour. Now ABC News is reporting something completely different. This may make you laugh, folks.
Is reporting something different about what?
Well, the George Zimmerman case, which is, of course, means that, you know, when Matt Gutman was doing all this investigative reporting, now they put someone completely different on the case. Lawyers for George Zimmerman believe that a newly released color photo of his injuries of their client sustained during his fatal altercation with Trayvon Martin and an alleged conversation involved Martin's father creates doubts about the strength of the murder case against the former Neighborhood Watch captain. The color photo, which was released months ago in black and white form, shows Zimmerman's swollen nose and blood dripping down his mouth. The image was released on Zimmerman's defense website, gzlegalcase.com. His attorneys released the image publicly Monday, along with a separate motion asking Sanford police investigator William Irwin to take another deposition because of comments he made that came to their attention after the first deposition. Zimmerman's attorneys say in the document that they learned after initially taking Irwin's deposition that he told Sanford Police Captain Robert O'Connor about overhearing a potentially damaging conversation between Trayvon Martin's father and lead investigator Chris Serino. In the alleged conversation, Irwin, who took the voice stress test on Zimmerman after his deadly confrontation, said he heard Tracy Martin, the unarmed team's father, tell Serino that the still unidentified scream in those now infamous calls did not belong to his son. Now, folks, we all knew this. We all knew this. We all talked about it. His father said, "That's not my son." In the stress test and throughout various interrogations, Zimmerman maintained that he acted in self-defense when he shot and killed Martin because he believed the teen, who he said attacked him, was going to cause severely bodily injury to him if he did not do something. Zimmerman maintains that he was screaming for help and shot Martin, 17, only after being repeatedly pummeled by the teen, who was walking back to his father's girlfriend's house from the 7-Eleven getting Skittles and tea. Zimmerman's attorneys called the conversation in the motion significant, saying the primary issue in this case, if not to sole issue to be decided either by this court at a self-defense immunity hearing or by a jury at trial, is whether Zimmerman was acting in self-defense. The elder Martin has disputed this police account in the past with both he and the teenager's mother, saying that he believed that the cries for help belonged to his son. And any misstatements happened during an early confusion and not knowing what happened to their son. Bull. Audio test of the screams on the 911 call, which was placed by a neighbor near the scene, have not conclusively linked a cry for help to either Zimmerman or Martin, casting another layer of doubt in this story. The latest information was released as Zimmerman's defense continues to gather evidence. It will use it in a stand your ground self-defense hearing next year. If the court sides with Zimmerman, it could mean that he'll never actually go to trial for second-degree murder. In the past few weeks, the defense has been interviewing officers involved in the early investigation, blah, 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 blah. Here's something interesting before I get to you guys' calls. Serino, the lead investigator who recommended charges be filed early on, hired Casey Anthony attorney Jose Baez in a highly unusual move last week. Audio and video taken days after the shooting showed that Serino was tough on Zimmerman during several interrogations, openly questioning his self-defense claim. Now, why would this guy hire Jose Baez, a defense attorney? An interesting question. I want to get to Sal, because Sal had a long question on Facebook, and I want him to articulate exactly what he was trying to say. What was your question about this and this new evidence, Sal?
So I don't have a question about the evidence. I think what bothers me about this is, and you will never know this, but the reality is, this kid Martin's supposedly 200 pounds, okay? If you know how to throw blows, okay, and you're a man of 200 pounds, you know how to throw a punch. Even if you land two or three good shots, his face would have been caved in. He wouldn't have just had a swollen nose.
Okay. I
mean, firstly, okay, the look, you know, it wasn't – so the account was that he's on top of him throwing punches, right?
Yeah,
they're both dancing and weaving and bobbing
Hold on. Sally, the witness who called 911, where you hear the screams, his description of Trayvon Martin swinging on George Zimmerman on the ground was that he was swinging haymakers MMA style.
Right, right.
So now, in essence, his swings are coming sort of in a roundhouse sort of way. In other words, they're not coming straight down. They're coming sort of at sort of a swing motion.
Yep, yep. But here's the thing. So
yeah.
If he's on top of Zimmerman, okay, and Zimmerman's on the ground, how is Zimmerman then pulling that gun? Does he tell him to take a break in the action while you're pounding me out? I'm going to reach in my pocket cleanly?
No.
Pull the gun out cleanly?
No, because Zimmerman says, Zimmerman says, He's scooting away from the kid. He's trying to wiggle away from him. He says while he's wiggling away, his shirt is revealing his weapon. Right? His shirt or his jacket is starting to reveal his weapon. So where he's scooting is his head. Okay, I'm going to try to give you sort of a theater of the mind. Most of Zimmerman's body from the neck down is on the grass. His head is on a sidewalk, on a concrete sidewalk.
Yep.
Zimmerman is trying to scoot downward, if you get my meaning. He's trying to scoot forward to get his head off the concrete onto the grass. In doing so, his clothing is riding up towards his chest from his waist because he's against the ground, so his clothing is scooting up, if you will, like it's undressing him, therefore
yep.
revealing the weapon. This is George Zimmerman's account. He says that while it reveals his weapon, Trayvon sees it and goes to reach for it. George Zimmerman fights him for it, grabs it, and fires. So in essence, it's a struggle for the gun. Zimmerman gets it first and fires. And that's when Trayvon says to him, all right, yo, he puts his hands up in the air and he says, all right, yo, you got it. And that's when he's dead.
Yeah, I mean, the weapon wasn't in his pocket. The weapon was in his concealed carry holster in his waistband.
Exactly.
Okay, so he pulled it, and Martin says, you got it, and then he shoots him?
No.
He shot him, and then he said, you got me, or some crazy crap like that.
Yeah, he said, you got me.
Yeah, you
shot
can't go 100% by that, because he was in shock. I mean, Zimmerman's exact recollection could be iffy. But what's not iffy is his face being beat to shit and his head being cut up in the back.
Yeah, I saw
everything that.
That
he says is a clear account. I mean, it's indisputable.
Where did he get hit? Where did the bullet hit Martin?
Square in the ticker, man. Square in the ticker. He hit him point blank range right in the center. Center mass.
And the hollow point expanded and tore through his aorta and shut him down. And you would pump out almost instantly from that one.
Oh, yeah.
So the only other part of this, so that sounds plausible. Okay, that does sound plausible, that account. But here's the other part of this. So he's got the weapon in his waistband, and he's following this kid. And then the kid approaches him and charges him, right?
Yeah, I mean, well, I shouldn't say he charges him.
No, he confronted him and said, "Yo, man, why are you following me?"
Exactly.
And then
Trayvon says that to him. "Yo, man, why? What would you follow? You got a problem." And George Zimmerman's account says, "No, I don't have a problem." And he says to him something something around the lines of, you know, "Well, you got a problem now," and he swings on him. So at that particular point, when he swings on him, he stumbles. Trayvon then continues to go, you know, he's got, you know, Trayvon feels, "I got him." Trayvon continues to pummel him, gets him on the ground. They're struggling for a little while till Trayvon gets on top, and then he's got the advantage.
And, you know, whether he was dropping bows on him or bashing his head on the ground, who knows? I mean, if some 6'2" rangy young man on top of me, I'm going to have my hands up trying to protect my face.
Right.
Yeah, he could have had him by the arms and bashed his head against the ground, taking him up and dropping him on the concrete. You know, it's plausible.
It is. But you know, at the end of the day, what you will never know, and I can speak for myself, when I've run across punks in my neighborhood where I go out and I confront them, you never know what's going through the mind of the person who's engaging. And if Zimmerman, you know, wanted to kill this kid, all he had to do, he knew he had the gun, he could have allowed this kid to come forward, hit him, fall back on the ground, let the kid hit him a few times, and shoot him. At the same time, the way I'm hearing it now, I think it's more likely that it played out the way you're describing. But you're never going to know.
You're never really going to know.
What bothers me the most about this,
and what makes me angry about people who are, quote-unquote, in such defense of Trayvon Martin, is that they're missing several key details here as far as Zimmerman is concerned. He had, and you've got to read the Reuters story that I think we posted it on Facebook. I'm going to find it again. But the Reuters story where they went to everybody in the neighborhood and black neighbors told the background of what happened that night. And one black woman says to the Reuters reporter, she says, "Listen, I'm black. And the people who were robbing the houses in this complex, they were all black kids wearing hoodies." Okay, when George Zimmerman went to go get a concealed carry gun, it was after his wife witnessed their neighbor who had a six-month-old baby, their next-door neighbor. She got robbed. The young black kids broke into her home while she was home by herself with a six-month-old. She had to run upstairs into a bedroom while they ransacked her house, climbed out the back door, and ran away. When Zimmerman got home, he gave the woman his telephone number, said because his wife was home during the day, gave her number and introduced the two of them and said, "If you got an issue, you go over to my wife's house." Zimmerman was afraid for his family and his well-being and his neighborhood. All of the kids that had been robbing were black. They were all suspicious. And here it was. George Zimmerman's walking around, calling a non-emergency number, seeing somebody walking around the neighborhood at night looking confused. He did or responded to what was happening in his neighborhood on a regular basis. So they're saying, "Oh, he should have never followed him." Well, that's what was happening anyway. In that neighborhood, people were letting these thugs, if you will, run rampant through the neighborhood and rob everybody. George Zimmerman decided to take on the responsibility of protecting his home. And Trayvon Martin was unwittingly a part of something that he knew nothing about. The neighborhood was dangerous. People were getting robbed. He's walking around in his hoodie, and then he ran. All he had to do was say to the guy, "Hey, yo, what you following me for?" Say, "Yo, do you live in this neighborhood?" "Yeah, my dad lives up the block." End of freaking discussion. "My dad and his girlfriend live up the block. What you bothering me for?" Even if it had been, "Yo, leave me alone, mother, father." You know what I'm saying? "Yo, what you doing? You ain't the cops. Why don't you leave me alone?" You know what I'm saying? "I'll call the cops on you. You ain't no..." Whatever it might have been, an argument, but nothing would have happened. What did Trayvon do? He starts walking towards him, and then he darts away. When he chases after him and the dispatcher says, "We don't need you to do that," what does he say? "Okay." So he stops. Trayvon confronts him. Whether you like it or not, He never, ever finds Trayvon and gets into an argument with him. It's never been argued. No one's ever said that he found Trayvon, then tried to whip his ass, lost the fight, and killed him. No one's ever said that.
No. But Reese. And you know, I'm sure you know what side of the fence I fall on.
I know.
You keep saying Trayvon walked towards him. And that is what George Zimmerman said. Trayvon walked towards me. Now,
yes.
You don't know exactly where they were in that complex when this happened. Now, again, and we're not even talking space or distance, but we're going to talk location. The location of the where the store was to where his father lived with his girlfriend, which was from one end of the complex to the other. No matter where George was in that complex, he would have had to have walked towards him.
Well,
to
wait,
go
wait,
by
wait.
Him in
Hold
order
on.
To
Not
get
true.
Down there to the other
Not
end.
Not true. Because if Trayvon Martin was running away, right? If he was running away, for whatever reason, because people kept saying he was running away, in essence, to get away from George Zimmerman. I don't believe that. I don't believe that for one second. I believe that he ran so he can get a leg up on Zimmerman. I
Bull.
Believe that he ran so he can sneak
believe,
up on him.
You don't know. You don't know.
Yeah. You know, the
but
other
it
thing
doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
Line,
it doesn't matter.
It's not on his
part. No. I know. Mike's going to say it doesn't matter. What matters is what's been presented as evidence. He got his ass whooped. He shot the kid. Stand your ground. It works.
It's not even stand your ground. That's just straight up self-defense.
No. But you know what? You wait until the evidence come out when we hear from George himself where he was and where Trayvon was when he came towards him.
Let me ask you this, JC.
I'm going to ask you one simple question.
Hold on.
It was to go
it's
by
a great
him.
Question here. This is a great question right here. Let's say, okay, George Zimmerman walks up to Trayvon Martin, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Trayvon Martin decks him right in the face. Bruises are consistent with that. He caps him one time in the face. Mac! George Zimmerman starts to stumble, right, before he falls to the ground. Bottom line is, why didn't George Zimmerman reach for his gun right then and there? His intention
was to
kill.
But you know what?
You
don't know that he didn't. So let's say that scenario you just painted is what happened. He falls to the ground. Martin goes to jump on top of him, and he shoots the gun at that moment. And the other story is just a story that he
so
made
glad
up.
I'm so glad you said that. Hold on. I'm so glad you said that. Between the time when the witness who called 911 right before the shooting or as the shooting happened, let's take that audio into consideration. The guy's on the phone with 911, comes outside. He's describing what's happening outside. There's a guy with a dark hoodie beating up a guy wearing a red jacket on the ground. Right? He walks out. He says, "I'm calling the police." He walks in. He's talking to the police. At least a minute passes. At least a minute passes, if not two. And then on the 911 call, you hear a final shot. Blah. It's at least 2 minutes into the call by the time you hear the shot. All I'm saying is this. It only takes 20 seconds, if that, to pull out your gun and fire on the kid. But he deals with 2 minutes of beating, getting his ass whipped. 2 minutes, if not longer before. Because remember, we're not talking about how long it took the guy in his house to come out to the front door to witness what's taking place. All of that's going on. There's never a shot fired. Not one time. During an altercation, a meeting, a conversation, an argument, a punch, falling to the ground, a wrestle, whatever it is, there's never a shot that goes off. Finally, after all of that, one bullet is fired. If George Zimmerman's intent, which is second-degree murder, which is malicious intent to kill him, why didn't it happen 2 minutes earlier?
If I'm walking through a neighborhood and there's been robberies and there's some guy with a cowboy hat that's been robbing houses, and I decide I want to take a walk one night, and I see some guy following me saying, "Hey, man, get over here. I want to talk to you." Okay? And I say, "Get away from me," and he keeps coming at me. I'm probably going
to... Do you not have a right to defend yourself at that point?
Wait. If the guy says, "Get away from me," right? Let's say it's Trayvon Martin saying, get away from me. If it's Trayvon Martin, get away from me.
I'm walking through a neighborhood. Some guy's following me. And I said, get the hell away from me. And this guy's like, wait a minute, I want to talk to you, whatever he said. And I said, get the fuck away from me. And this guy keeps coming at me. I'm not going to let him get within striking range. I'm going to strike him. Because the minute strike.
But you're
Sal,
right.
You
that's
know
not,
what? But
that's
Sal,
not what the phone call says.
But Sal, you never know. Listen, we all want to, you know, we all say we would stand up for ourselves, of course.
Hindsight's
20/20. But, you know, at that moment, when you're in that moment, I've been put in that position where, you know, someone was actually following me. And it's scary. But I would want to, you know, I got away. I wasn't trying to, you know, go back and confront the person. I was fleeing the scene. You know, I was gone. You know?
Yeah, and
so,
that's what the 911 call says, or the 911
okay,
emergency call.
Mary.
He says this guy's running and I don't see where he is.
Here's another thing that I want everybody to consider. Trayvon Martin was a 6-foot-tall black kid who played football and was a wide receiver.
But I'm sure that
Wait. No. This
sure
is important. Let me finish this point. He's a 6-foot-tall black wide receiver on a high school football team. Okay, JC? George Zimmerman says that Trayvon Martin ran. We all believe that Trayvon Martin ran because most people who believe that he ran believe that he ran to get away from George Zimmerman. Okay? From the distance of where he was shot or where he met George Zimmerman to the house of his father's girlfriend, that boy could have ran, what do they call it, a 4-minute 40, whatever it is they call it.
A 4-second 40.
Yeah,
a 4-second 40. Yeah.
That kid could have run to his house. If he was hunted down like a rabid dog, as Frederica Wilson says.
Oh, Lord.
If he was hunted down and he ran from George Zimmerman, the safest place, remember, this is his father's girlfriend's house. Trayvon knows nobody in the neighborhood. He knows one safe place. He never runs home. That would implicate the fact that George Zimmerman tracked him down, found him, and then shot him in the chest maliciously. There'd be no reason for an ass whipping.
Right, man. Trayvon Martin thought he found a sheep and he found a wolf instead. He thought he found himself something.
Well, see, here's the problem.
This is so crazy.
First off, Mary.
Man had a gun and was going to take his life. I'm sure that Trayvon never thought that.
No, Mary, you were in that situation. You're not the fighter that Trayvon. You don't have the background or come from the same background that Trayvon comes from. He's a fighter. He's used to confronting and take and senselessly.
Hold on, let me finish.
I come from a background of fighting. My mother was whipping bitches' asses in the bar.
Okay, but you just said you were scared.
But she was in a position where she was by herself.
But I was by myself, and I didn't know who the hell this person was.
Right, and she doesn't know what they possess.
I don't know if they got a gun, if they got a knife, or what. I'm getting the hell out of Dodge.
Thank you.
Okay, and then again, that's you. That's you, Mary.
We don't know
what Trayvon's thought process was or what was going through his mind at that time because we're not here, and he's not here to speak for himself.
Mary's not an asshole.
And Trayvon Martin was an asshole.
None of that is relevant.
He was a thug, asshole, who was looking for a friend, and according
to this guy's history, he had a problem with minorities, even though he was one himself.
No, he was tutoring Negro children.
I'm a bullet, you'd say that. JC, the kid tutored young black kids.
He might have tutored young black kids. But I mean, what do you say about the Mexican?
He is a Mexican. He's like a Peruvian or something.
Yeah, why does he talk shit about them though? Why does he talk shit about them?
Mexicans in Virginia Beach were robbing cars and mugging people. Jesus.
And he also championed that homeless guy that got beat up by the cops down there.
And I understand. I agree with that. But we're talking about this case in specific. And then again, Reese, you say that you're talking about distance and time. It was way more than 40 yards to where his father was from where he
got
shot.
It was 60. You and I calculated it. It was 60 yards.
But I got to ask Mike a question because of what you just said. Again, scenario. You're out walking. Some guy says, hey, get over here. I want to talk to you. Are you guys telling me the guy for cigarettes?
It's like, it's like they don't give him the right to be fearful for his own life. Like, he don't have that right.
No, of course he does.
You know what you also don't have the right to do? You don't have the right to punch people in the face.
You're taking that from him, and you let his past take that from him.
No,
that
JC,
matters.
I'm not saying
that.
I'm not saying that, JC.
He took that from himself when he punched the guy in the face.
There you go. Exactly. He took that away from himself. Any implication.
So why couldn't he? Why wasn't he standing his own ground?
He was starting a fight. That's a difference.
Exactly.
You can only stand your ground in the face of deadly force. There was no deadly force presented to him for him to defend himself.
Thank you. Very much so. Because, this is where people are trying. They're trying to give the stand your ground position.
Or if you feel threatened, right?
Hold on. You're trying to give the stand your ground position to Trayvon Martin after the fact. Here's what it is that I'm saying to you, right? Wait a minute. Trayvon Martin, and I want you to deal with facts here, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Trayvon Martin, does he have zero knowledge that George Zimmerman has a gun or 100% knowledge that George Zimmerman has a gun?
He has no knowledge of it.
Thank you. Does he have zero knowledge or 100% knowledge that George Zimmerman is the neighborhood watch captain?
No knowledge.
Okay. All he knows is that George Zimmerman is a stranger, right?
That's accosting him.
Danger,
right.
My man. Get out of Dodge.
George Zimmerman is a stranger who Trayvon Martin, based on everybody's speculation, is being followed by George Zimmerman, right? So
In his own words. Don't say everybody on George's own words, yes.
No. Trayvon Martin's...
We're talking facts.
Trayvon Martin. Let's look at this. Trayvon Martin gets into an altercation where it turns to blows. It turns to blows because George Zimmerman has done what to him?
Reese, I think you got this all wrong, though. I am not defending Trayvon Martin, but I'm asking you a specific question. You're walking down the street and somebody engages you in this way. Could you ever run? I wouldn't turn my back and run, thinking if the guy did have a weapon, he's going to shoot me in the back. I'd probably look at him, try to back up as I'm looking at him while I'm talking. So I'm not saying that Martin.
Whoa, wait. Can I tell you? I'm going to tell you guys a descriptive. I'm going to tell you guys what happened to me, okay? I was 17 years old. It was July of, I think, 92. My cousin came home, and he's like, hey, let's walk to the store. Walk with me to the store to get cigarettes. All the stores downstairs were closed. They lived in the projects in Far Rockaway, so we had to walk across underneath the railroad tracks across to the other projects, to the other store that was open 24 hours to get cigarettes. So we're walking, and we do this all the time. It's not like, we don't live, we haven't been living over there. I was living over there. My mother had already moved to Virginia, so I stayed behind in New York. So we walk. Okay, whatever. We walk out, and it's July, okay? It's summertime. This guy is standing outside with a black hoodie on. How ironic. With a hoodie on, a long sleeve sweat hoodie in July. He says to my cousin, yo, my man, you got the time? So my cousin's like, nah, man. I looked at my cousin, and I was like, walk very fast, Raymond, because I know that the kid is about to try to stick us up. We're walking. We're trying to walk as fast as we can. I see him. I know he's behind us. He's following us. We get around the corner, and I'm like, all right, let's walk a little bit faster. So all of a sudden, we hear, stop and drop everything out your pocket. And all I heard was the gun click, and that was it for me. I dropped everything out of my pockets. My cousin's arguing with the kid. I'm like, anyway, he's like, you have 10 seconds to turn around and run as fast as you can, or I'm going to shoot you in your back.
Oh.
And, that's a different scenario.
And by the time, but
I was
the instinctual thing is, hold on now, listen, the instinctual thing here is, and that's the point here, Sal, the instinctual thing here is that Trayvon is from the hood. He's not from the suburbs. The kid's from the hood. He speaks hood talk. He knows lifestyle. He's 17. Not 10. He's 17.
What's the point?
Well, I'll tell you what the point is. He's got someone he believes is following him in the car. He's telling his girlfriend, who we're supposed to believe, he's telling his girlfriend that he's being followed. His girlfriend, who's his same age, tells him to do what? Run, Trayvon, run. And what does he do? He runs. Not because he's a tough guy, because he thinks he might be in danger. But what does he do instead? He runs, not to his home, which his girlfriend told him to do. He comes back in the opposite direction of his father's girlfriend's home and ends up in an altercation with George Zimmerman.
Wait a minute.
There's no fact to that.
Every fact to that because of where he was shot and killed.
But, Reese, let's assume you're right. It doesn't matter. If I'm going to run, I'm not running back to my house because you're telling this guy where you are. So you go a different direction, and maybe you're still trying to get away, but you're not going to run to your house because if this guy's following you, why would you take him to your house? Now he knows where you live.
I don't think Trayvon Martin,
he's not bright enough to think that way. That's going to be the defense.
Trayvon Martin was in physical fear of George Zimmerman. I think Trayvon Martin was afraid he was getting in trouble for scoping out houses. Because he was a little thief.
That's entirely possible.
That's a fact. The reason why he was with his dad that weekend.
Okay, again, that's opinion.
It is fact. We know he was a thief.
That's a fact. There's no way to know that he was scoping out apartments. Wait.
Yeah, Zimmerman said this guy's lurking around, looking suspicious, looking in windows.
Yes, JC.
He's done that 51 other times.
School for having burglary devices, women's jewelry, and marijuana traces in his book bag. Yes or no?
Yeah. But did George Zimmerman not call 57 other times too on the same kind of exact call?
Non-emergency phone call. And why?
Right.
Was it non-emergency number, and why? Because that neighborhood was being plagued with robberies.
So why is he so predisposed to call it an individual that looked like that?
JC,
those are the guys that are robbing the neighborhood.
That's
if a bunch of short guys were robbing the neighborhood, he'd call it for hobbits.
Exactly.
Frodo Baggins is on his tiptoes peeking in his window, you know?
I don't understand.
No, but listen. Or he would have already testified to that. All he says is guys walking around looking suspicious.
No, he didn't say looking suspicious. That's not what he said, JC. You've heard the 911 tape.
What did he say? What did he say, Reese?
In people's houses.
I don't recall that.
Yeah, he's acting suspicious. He looks like he's on drugs.
Hold on. I don't want anything to go untouched here. If we're going to talk about this, let me get to the
I can't wait for the trial.
911 call. Here we go.
Central Police Department, lines being recorded by Sean.
Hey, we've had some break-ins in my neighborhood, and there's a real suspicious guy. It's Retrieve View Circle. The best address I can give you is 111 Retrieve View Circle. This guy looks like he's up to no good, or he's on drugs or something. It's raining, and he's just walking around looking about.
Okay, and this guy, is he white, black, or Hispanic?
He looks black.
Did you see what he was wearing?
Yeah, a dark hoodie, like a gray hoodie, and either jeans or sweatpants and white tennis shoes. He's here, I don't know, he was just staring.
Oh, he was just walking around the area?
At all the houses.
Okay.
And now he's just staring at me.
Okay, it's 1111 Retrieve View or 111?
That's the clubhouse.
That's the clubhouse. Do you know what he's near the clubhouse right now?
Yeah, now he's coming towards me.
Okay.
He's got a hand in his waistband. And he's a black male.
Okay. Okay. How old would you say it looks?
Got a button on his shirt. Late teens.
Late teens, okay.
Mm-hmm. Something's wrong with him. Yeah. He's coming to check me out. He's got something in his hands. I don't know what his deal is.
Okay, just let me know if he does anything, okay? Yeah, we got him on the line. Just let me know if this guy does anything else.
Okay. These assholes, they always get away. Yeah. When you come to the clubhouse, you come straight in and make a left. Actually, you go past the clubhouse.
Okay, it says on the left-hand side from the clubhouse?
No, you go in straight through the entrance, and then you make a left. Yeah, you go straight in. Don't turn and make a left. Shit, he's running.
He's running. Which way is he running?
Down towards the entrance of the neighborhood.
Okay, which entrance is that he's heading towards?
The back entrance.
Are you following him?
Yeah.
Okay, we don't need you to do that. Sir, what is your name?
George. He ran.
All right, George, what's your last name?
Zimmerman.
And George, what's the phone number you're calling from?
407-435-2400.
All right, George, we do have him on the way. Do you want to meet with the officer when they get out there?
Yeah.
All right, where are you going to meet with them at?
If they come in through the gate, tell them to go straight past the clubhouse and straight past the clubhouse and make a left, and then they go past the mailboxes. You'll see my truck.
Okay, what address are you parked in front of?
I don't know. It's a cut through, so I don't know the address.
Okay, do you live in the area?
Yeah.
What's your apartment number?
It's a home. It's 1950. Oh, crap, I don't want to get that loud. I don't know where this kid is.
Okay, do you want to just be with him right near the mailboxes, then?
Yeah, that's fine.
All right, George, I'll let him know to meet you with the other.
Actually, could you have him call me and I'll tell him where I'm at?
Okay, yeah, that's no problem.
You mean my number, you got it?
Yeah, I got it. It's 407-435-2400.
Yeah, you got it.
Okay, no problem. I'll let him know to call you when they're in the area.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
Sounds like he was hunting down the kid to kill him, don't he?
No, but don't look like the kid was doesn't like the kid was scoping in windows because he never said anything. He said he was walking by looking at houses.
Wait. Why would he tell the cops to come meet him? Wait. Why would he tell the cops where to meet him, call him on his cell phone, if he was being hunted down like a rabid dog?
Why didn't he stay at the clubhouse like he was
Don't petty fog.
From the clubhouse
answer,
to where he shot him is a long distance.
None of that, JC, you're arguing semantics here. None of that matters. The
Why
whole
doesn't
thing
that matter?
No, JC, listen, please. What? I love you, but listen. The kid is being charged. George Zimmerman, the man is being charged with second-degree murder. That mm-hmm. is intentional
murder.
Intentional death. I do not think, and I don't think that you think, or anyone else really truly believes that George Zimmerman was hunting this kid down like a rabid dog with a pistol.
No, because I don't agree with
JC, let me finish. I think that it is a very sad situation that someone had to lose their life in a humanly way.
Inhumane way?
No, I'm talking about from one human to another. It's sad to me that somebody had to lose their life. It is very unfortunate, JC. I understand that. And that is probably where you're really coming from. Because I know how I know who you are. But George Zimmerman in no way, shape, or form tracked this kid down intentionally with the intent to kill him. He did not get out of his vehicle and run after this kid with the intent to kill him. He did that with the intent of following him to find out where he was going so that he could then lead the police to him, which he was on the phone with. I do believe
that was his intention. I do not agree.
Kill him.
I do not agree that it was his intention to hunt this kid down. No, I never said that I believe
that's
that.
That's what he's being charged with, though. He's being charged with second-degree murder, and if you look up the definition of second-degree murder, that is intentional homicide, intentional murder.
And they will never get a conviction on that.
Intent.
No, they're not.
I don't know if you heard that 911 call played in its entirety. It's 4 minutes, 6 seconds. Have you heard the details in that way?
No, when I'm hearing what you just played, I agree with what Mary's saying, and I agree that Martin was probably case in the neighborhood. I think this all comes down to the moment of confrontation, and there's no way this is a murder case. It may be a manslaughter case, but you're not going to be able to prove that. At the end of the day, he's not going to get...
And the thing with that, Sal, is they're not charging him with manslaughter. They're charging him with second-degree murder. So will he be convicted on those charges?
Of course
Doubtful.
Not.
Doubtful.
I'm thinking negligence homicide myself.
Can I read you guys a statute?
Say again, Mike.
Can I read you guys a statute from Florida State law?
Please do.
I've read it before, but we'll do it again. Okay, this is from Florida State statutes regarding self-defense, justifiable use of force. I'll get to the one that's the most important in this situation. Let's just say that we'll go with JC's scenario that Trayvon Martin felt threatened and George Zimmerman was the aggressor. Okay, we'll go with that idea.
Okay.
Florida statute 776.041 is titled Use of Force by Aggressor. It says, the justification described in the preceding sections of this chapter is not available to a person who is attempting to commit, committing, or escaping after the commission of a felony, or initially provokes the use of force against himself or herself unless such force is so great that the person reasonably believes that he or she is in imminent threat of danger or death or great bodily harm, and that he or she has exhausted every reasonable means to escape such danger, other than the use of force which is likely to cause death or great bodily harm up to the assailant, or, in good faith, the person withdraws from physical contact with the assailant and indicates clearly to the assailant that he or she desires to withdraw and terminate the use of force, but the assailant continues or resumes the use of force. In other words, if you are getting your ass whipped by a 6-foot-tall, 180-pound kid, and you're on the ground, you're allowed to shoot them. Period.
And wait. And in Trayvon Martin's case, if JC wants to use the argument that what about the self-defense of Trayvon Martin, in no way was he in a position, no way was he in a position where he couldn't get away from the situation. He's on top of George Zimmerman. He could stop hitting him at any given time, run away. He's incapacitated George Zimmerman by putting him on the ground, bloodying his nose, banging his head. He could have got up and ran and got away with it. But what did he do? He continued to pummel him. That's a fact, JC. Yeah.
So you know what part I don't get? At what point does Zimmerman get out of the truck and Martin comes and he intercepts Martin, or Martin supposedly comes back after him? Because he's in his car the whole time during the call, right?
No.
He was walking. You hear him open the car door. You can hear it, ding, 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 and then you hear him. You hear the wind. You hear him getting kind of out of breath. And the dispatcher says, "Are you following him?" And he says, "Yes,
I am."
Car
story. Okay.
Right.
Okay.
Now remember.
No. He was running after him. He was walking swiftly or whatever. But he was following him. And the dispatcher said, we don't need you to do that. And he said, okay. Now, I don't know, you know, whether he was walking back to his car at that point, whether he was walking to the mailboxes or he was right at the mailboxes at that point. He was waiting. Nobody knows that.
But his conversation with the police dispatcher, and you know what? This is arguable. And I'll give you this, JC. It is arguable. He's saying to the dispatcher after, you know, he doesn't get out of his car until Trayvon runs. These assholes always get away, is what he says. You hear the car door open, he gets out of the car and starts running. Now, when he's trying to find Trayvon, and he's giving his address to the dispatcher, you hear George Zimmerman say, clearly, I don't know where this kid is. I don't want to say my address too loud.
Yeah, and there's one other piece of this, and this is where, so Reese, just what you just said there, he says something else as well. As he's talking to the cop, and it does not sound genuine at all, he says, oh, he's got something in his hand. He's got something on him. He's got a problem. I think at that point in his head, he's already considering the possible use of that weapon.
I don't think that.
What was in the kid's hand? He had a phone, right?
And why wouldn't he? And why wouldn't he?
Whoa. He doesn't know what he has in his hand, but what George Zimmerman, and I can't speak for him, but I'm speculating here. He knows that houses are being robbed. He doesn't know what Trayvon has in his hand. He says he's got something in his hand, and he's reaching in his waistband. That's what he says.
He followed it up with something like he's got a problem, or what did he say there? He says
he's got
something
a
going wrong. There's
like
something wrong with him. Yeah, there's something wrong with him.
Right.
Well, he could have been reaching to hold up his saggy pants, which is not an uncommon fashion statement.
And you know
there we go. Excuses.
Well, he said he was wearing sweats. Brothers don't wear tight Urkel sweats, dude.
They don't.
No, not necessarily. But I mean, you tend to incorporate his lifestyle or his past.
No, dude, I'm incorporating what George Zimmerman said he was wearing.
And we do know what he was wearing, JC.
Right, we know exactly what he was wearing. But, I mean, we also said that he was looking at houses. So, no, he was looking at houses. And if you had to go into the complex where he got into the complex at to get to where he's got to go, you have nothing but houses to look at.
Okay,
JC, don't get to punch somebody in the face and bash their head on the ground without getting shot. That's it.
You just don't.
And you don't get to stalk somebody without getting your ass whooped.
You don't get to whip somebody's ass because they made you feel uncomfortable. Period.
What he was doing
does not meet the definition
of stalking.
Why doesn't that apply to him? I don't understand.
Wait, hold on. Edward, you just said that what he was doing is not what?
Does not meet the definition of stalking in the state of Florida.
Yeah, it's
no, it doesn't. Not at all.
Only in the state of Florida.
No, only in the world.
If that's the case, then Bill Clinton should have gotten head for Monica in Florida because it's not sexual relations.
Here's the thing.
Like, why don't these laws apply in Florida?
Zimmerman could have walked up to him and said, I'm going to say some questionable language. It's okay on this show. He could have said, listen here, nigger, get over here. What's your problem, black ass? And he still didn't have the right to punch him in the face. Period.
Exactly.
No, but He didn't do any of that. He just followed him. And I would feel threatened if someone follows you.
Punch somebody because you feel threatened.
Let me tell you something. Zimmerman could have been walking around in a full KKK outfit, and he still did not have a right to punch him in the face. Trayvon.
Period.
That's right.
Now I'm a little puzzled. I mean,
this kid has no rights whatsoever.
If someone's following me, and they start kind of yelling at me, and then they engage me, it's a matter of seconds before I make a choice whether I'm going to...
Yeah, but, dude, we heard there's no evidence that he yelled at him or engaged him at all. None.
Right.
Yeah,
remember,
the dead can't speak.
We can only speak for the trigger puller.
Here's what we're missing. And as I said before in my earlier scenario about the witness who caught the gunfire on his phone when he called police, we're talking about a four-minute, six-second phone call, okay? He calls. He says that he sees this young man scoping around houses from what he believes, right? He says that he sees the young man run. He gets out of the car. He follows him. The dispatcher asked him if he's following him. He says no. This all takes place in 4 minutes, guys.
Listen, you guys are going to be proven so wrong when it goes to trial.
Wait.
It's not even going to trial, dude.
It's never going to see the light of day in a trial. It's never going to see it. It's never going to see it. And when all of this goes down, all of this goes down in 4 minutes and 6 seconds, when George Zimmerman clearly says, I don't see him, I can't find him, and he's talking to the police dispatcher casually about where he is, where he should meet them, and that whole bit, right? When he's saying all of that, you have got to then assume that George Zimmerman is on the phone following procedure, which he's told to do, right? Because he's told that he's following procedure. He's calling a non-emergency number. He's giving a full description. He's breaking down where the police should go, how they should enter the complex. He's giving all of that information, all of it, in 4 minutes. You would have to assume then, JC, if he's stalking him, that George Zimmerman is lying on this phone call and he's still looking for him. And he's trying to find him so he can go find him and confront him so he can find out what he's doing in the neighborhood. But yet, he called 57 times to that non-emergency number, and that's never happened. Never.
And if he wanted to kill this kid so bad, I'll go back to something Sal said. Nobody who is of a mindset to kill somebody is going to voluntarily take a savage ass whipping first.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Nobody. Because you don't know if this kid's a good fighter. He could be a jiu-jitsu master for all you know. You're not going to put yourself in a situation to have him beat you.
And if you think he has something in his waistband, sure as shit are not going to let this kid get one up on you.
You're going to pull that gun out first. Let me ask you something,
and I know this is not an anti-gun statement. I'm definitely not that guy, but let me ask you a question. You're George Zimmerman, and you don't have that weapon. Are you going to be as bold about following this kid?
That's a great question, Sal.
Yeah, that's a good question, and I will say probably not.
Probably not.
He had a gun. He wasn't out on patrol. He was going to the store, for crying out loud.
Right.
And he was looking out for himself. You know, that gun was for his protection.
Right. And you're probably right.
At the end of the day, I think we all agree, there's not going to be a conviction here. And the odds are, listening to everything, that he didn't plan on killing this kid. But at some point, you know, he decides to shoot that gun. And at that moment, when you draw on someone that way, the part I have trouble understanding still is they're in this skirmish. They both go for the gun. Zimmerman pulls it. At that point, he's got every right. Or I guess possibly he's so hyped up and in fear of his life, he just pulls the trigger, doesn't think twice about it. But do you really think it happened that instantaneously?
Of course,
Sal. Life or death situation, man.
Sal, in that situation, I'm telling you, I'll give you the scenario. But the way that JC is depicting this, and many people in the media are trying to predict this who want to make Trayvon Martin out to be a good kid who didn't deserve to die...
Hold on.
Most people would put that scenario just like this. Yo, my man, what you following me for? I don't know, nigga. You in my neighborhood. I figured. That's it.
Yeah.
No.
That would have been a good story. But George Zimmerman was so calculated. He said, yeah, you know what I'll do? I'll let this kid beat my ass. I'll let him beat me to a pulp. I'll let him keep pummeling me, beat the back of my head.
One thing, guys, and I mean, I can speak from my own experience. We've had a lot of break-ins around here. I've engaged people out in the street. I am pissed, and I do get pissed. And sometimes I'm angry when I go engage people out in front of my house, and they look like they're up to no good. Let's not make the claim, though, that Zimmerman wasn't angry at all at this individual who he believed was terrorizing the neighborhood. Come on.
He believed that he knew his whole neighborhood was being terrorized. Everyone in the neighborhood knew that they were being terrorized. But you know what I'm saying? With all of that being considered, you don't let somebody just get on top of you, you know what I'm saying, and just keep whipping your ass. Just keep punching you, no matter what. I'm just going to keep beating the hell out of you. I'm going to hit you in the face. I'm going to be you know, Gene, before I finally just say enough.
Look, man, I've been through some defensive handgun courses, and Zimmerman did some wrong stuff, okay? If I was in that situation and I'm carrying, he's not getting that close to me before I'm drawing leather, before I'm clearing leather.
That's
he's not getting within
punching
distance of me.
That confuses me. I mean, and the fact
now,
that...
George...
Go ahead, Sal.
No. I mean, that part did confuse me. The fact that he's got a weapon and allows this physical altercation to take place, he puts himself at risk at that point.
There has
to be a zone that you allow an attacker, that you immediately make that decision. If you're going to be attacked, that you either draw that weapon, if you can't extricate yourself, you should draw the weapon before he's on top of you.
Well, you see, I think that points more to the fact that Zimmerman was not a hardcore racist. Because I'm telling you, man, you know, if I had my gun and that 6-foot-tall hoodie-wearing hoodlum approached me, I'm drawing and saying, get the F back. You're not getting within that close to punch me. I think he was kind of a soft guy who didn't really want any trouble. He ended up with trouble. He didn't want trouble.
Then
he's the kind of guy that
with a weapon in your holster. Half the time, I never go outside with a weapon. I've walked up to dark cars, and I know it's a risk. But my wife hates when I do it, and I always tell her, the minute you close your eyes and you're just giving up, I'm not going to let this neighborhood and let them do what they're doing in front of my house. The bottom line is, the minute you go outside with a weapon, you are then going to have to make a choice whether you're going to use that weapon or not. So why then was he afraid? He knew he had the weapon. So why would he not use it when the altercation took place before they
I'll tell you why, Sal.
Go ahead, Aaron.
There are a lot of people who take gun courses and get gun permits, but they don't have a heart to kill someone. They think they do.
Right.
You know, they like to have the gun in the house, but they, when it comes to push comes to shove, and it comes to take somebody's life, they don't have it in them.
Yeah, they're not, exactly. And just because you have a gun doesn't mean that you have a propensity to kill. That's, and we know that's not George Zimmerman. We know that's not his case.
He was a dejected security guard who couldn't make the force. He couldn't make it with security companies until he was self-appointed.
Well, yeah, but he wasn't Rambo. You're kind of making the point. He was kind of a soft dude.
Exactly. Which again.
No. Just because he couldn't make the force, don't make him soft.
Yeah, apparently he was
soft.
Because he let that dude be close enough to punch
but
him in the face.
You're saying that he couldn't make the force because he was soft.
No. Because he didn't qualify. That doesn't make him soft.
Okay, that's fine. He didn't qualify. Wait. He didn't qualify.
And JC.
Why didn't... Wait. You know it's a great question, but I don't want to cut you off. I apologize. You know it's a great question, JC.
Sal
brought this up. If he finally meets up with Trayvon Martin, let's say, I'm going to give you the benefit of the doubt here. Let's say the scenario happened like this. George Zimmerman is ignoring the police the police dispatcher, right? He's ignoring him. When he tells him don't follow him, he says okay, but he goes to look for him anyway. So he runs around and he goes to look for him. Oh, shit, there he is. He finds him, okay? George Zimmerman does not pull out his gun and go, freeze. Yo, my man, stay where you are. Stay right where you are until the cops come in. That never... Exactly. It's a citizen's arrest. Stay where you are. This is a wannabe cop, right? Stay where you are. Get on the ground. Or spread your arms. Spread your legs. Stay where you are. Let me search your pockets. What you got in your ass? You got crack rocks in there? Why didn't he do
anything? Okay, now, given everything that you just said, Reese, given everything that you just said... I mean, exactly as you just said it. The only person that could testify that is the individual that has his ass to cover.
Wait, JC. George Zimmerman is the only person with a gun. And he catches Trayvon hiding in a trash can or behind somebody's house. He finds him. He hunts him down like a rabid dog. He's got him in the corner. Why doesn't he pull out the gun and say, freeze, don't move, get on the ground? Why does it turn out to be an altercation where George Zimmerman has a bloody nose and a back of his head is bashed in? Why does that happen? He's got the gun.
Well, this is the point, guys, and this is all I'm saying. I understand that maybe initially
this thing sounds totally legit. But at some point, you've got to wonder why. Let's say he found this kid. How did that turn into a physical altercation when he knows he's got a gun in his belt? And that gun can be taken away from him, and he can lose his life.
Well, because you got to remember, cause according to everyone else, Trayvon's an animal.
Well, no.
Not because Trayvon is an animal. George Zimmerman did not do the right thing. No one is saying that. What he should have done was draw that weapon and say, no, stop right where you are. This is citizen's arrest. The police are on their way. And if Trayvon ran, then Trayvon runs. You know what I mean? You're not going to shoot. Then if you shoot the kid in the back, okay. That's a problem. But the bottom line is, George Zimmerman is being charged with intentional murder.
Right. We all agree that they're not going to get a conviction on that.
But if I may, JC, here's the most important part, okay? The reason why, and Sal asked the most key question in this whole thing, and the reason why it's never going to see a trial, Sal just hit it right on the head, okay? It's because if George Zimmerman was the one with the gun, the 9mm, and Trayvon Martin only had Skittles and a bottle of iced tea and a can of iced tea, okay? How did it get to the point that the two of them were swinging blows at each other or fighting on the ground? Well, that, my friend, answers the key question in a second-degree murder case, and that is intent. Because if George Zimmerman intended to shoot and kill Trayvon, it wouldn't have gotten any further than the first blow, if not before a blow was ever thrown. George Zimmerman would have pulled out his gun, drawn on the kid, and told him to stand his ground. Get on your knees, put your hands up, or whatever. That's what he could have done. He never did it. But it ended up with two people on the ground, one guy pummeling the other, and then a shot being fired. This is the only person with a gun. They keep screaming that George Zimmerman shot this kid down. But everything shows what? Shows the extreme opposite. George Zimmerman always had the advantage. From the kid running, to the kid approaching him, to them getting it. He always had the advantage until the shots were fired. Never pulling out his gun, JC, until the last final moments after he's getting his head bashed in and his face bashed in. You explain to me how this guy had the advantage the entire time, and the only way this kid dies is when George Zimmerman bloodied and bruised.
Well, I can't answer that. I wasn't there.
Of course you can't. Of course,
but neither can you. Neither none of us, because we're all speculating.
You have to go by the evidence, man. That's how the legal system works. And
well,
the evidence
there are problems
is
with
one
laws
guy.
I mean,
one
there are
guy
problems
got
with laws in
with,
Florida, obviously.
The evidence shows that one guy got his ass whipped, and one guy had one wound, which was a fatal gunshot wound. Therefore, the guy who was doing the ass whipping got shot.
That's it.
Agreed. And I'm going to just finish my thought on this. I absolutely agree there's no conviction here. I agree that initially I don't think Zimmerman was looking to kill this kid, but I'm going to say again, I think he was pissed off. I think he was angry. He was pursuing. And at the end of it, I still don't understand why he didn't draw on him and tell him to freeze. And secondly, how they came to blows. And I disagree that he wouldn't take a couple of shots if he wanted. Now, this is where I'm going to take a leap. I don't know that there's a case, but if he wanted to kill the kid, he probably knew he had to at least get in an altercation before he could shoot. You couldn't call this thing a law by saying...
I'll accept that, Sal. Sal, that's way more plausible than what JC is putting out there.
And my point all along is, we do not know what was in this guy's mind, Zimmerman. Trayvon Martin was probably exactly what it seems like he was, which is a thug who was robbing houses. Let me tell you, if a thug ever comes into my house, they're dead. Does that make me a crazy guy? No, because I what's mine is mine. I'm going to protect what's mine. At the same time...
Did you... Mike, I want to ask you guys this. Did you guys hear the case about the guy who was robbed by two teenagers, a guy and a girl? They came into his house. They were robbing him. He shot the both of them.
Yep.
He shot. What's that, Jay? What's that, Mike?
Yeah, I didn't hear that one at all.
Oh no. Okay. The story. Okay. So the bottom line of the story is, look it up. This guy is right now. He's been arrested. I'm almost certain this is in Florida as well, but I might be wrong. But the deal is that two teenagers, a guy and a girl, come into his house and they rob him, right? So he shoots the both of them. One of the kids ends up surviving a gunshot wound and then laughs at him when he shot the other teen. He then takes his gun, goes right up to the other teenager, puts the gun, I believe, under the chin and shoots them one more time. And they're charging him with excessive murder. I think it's murder in the second degree as well, because they're saying that him killing the two teenagers was excessive. He could have just shot them and that'd be the end of it. But then they said he went above and beyond after he incapacitated them with a gunshot wound.
Hey, he may be screwed, because you're not allowed to do that either.
Yeah, I know.
That's why, my friend, you always do what's called the Mozambique drill.
Ooh, explain that one to me.
The Mozambique drill is two to the chest and one to the head, always.
Is that what they do in the firing range?
They called it Mozambique drill because I guess there was some war in Mozambique. The mercenaries were having to shoot the Mozambicans, and they were all whacked out on drugs, or the guys had underpowered weaponry, so they had to shoot them that way to make sure they were dead.
Ooh, wow.
Or use a broadhead, put a hole the size of a softball in him. But at the end of the day.
Yeah, that's just awful.
That's violence, gentlemen. Violence! Violence solves nothing!
Hey, look, okay, man. If you're going to draw your weapon and shoot somebody, you need to empty the clip at them. Make sure they're dead. Because dead people can't sue you.
And let me just say, one of the reasons Trayvon may not have wanted to pull his weapon and even say, hey, this is a citizen's arrest, stop where you are, whatever.
You mean Zimmerman.
Okay. Zimmerman may not have wanted, he may have been reluctant to draw his weapon because he may have been thinking, I don't know if this kid has a weapon. And if I pull my weapon and this kid has a weapon, I'm going to have to make a life-altering decision if I pull my weapon. Because if I draw and he's got one and he pulls, one of us is going to have to go. And I don't know if I can do that.
That's a very valid question.
Yeah, I agree. I think Zimmerman probably, didn't want trouble. He may have wanted to follow the kid, but I don't think he was wanting to kill this guy. And
I don't believe that he wanted to kill him either.
But I don't think anybody is going to calculate in a split second, I'll take an ass whipping first, and then I'm going to get to kill this kid. It's you can pull that kid off in the dark and shoot him, dude. You've got a white guy against a black guy. You're going to get away with it.
Wow.
In Florida? Hell yeah. Yeah. Hell yeah. You got a suburban white guy who the neighbors love versus this hoodlum. Yeah, you're going to get away with it. You got to take the ass whipping first.
Well, yeah. If that's the way he wanted to do it, yeah, why not?
Dead men tell no tales.
No. It's a rational thing to say. It's like, if that's what it was that. He had the odds were not against George Zimmerman if that's the way he wanted to play it out. If indeed that was what his scenario was, as everyone is trying to proclaim, the bottom line is he would have won that argument day in and day out. What happened to this was that those knuckleheads and Al Sharpton in cahoots with them at MSNBC made this an issue for everybody else because they heard the name Zimmerman, assumed he was white, and wanted to make this a white-on-black issue. Black boy killed, unarmed, had some Skittles, and had all the elements that leftists love. And then when the evidence started to pour out about this kid, then it was, stop defaming my child. Stop defaming poor Trayvon. What were you folks doing beforehand? George Zimmerman was a white Hispanic? George Zimmerman called himself the N-word on MySpace? George Zimmerman was a racist and didn't like blacks. George Zimmerman had disparaged blacks in the past. But then it started coming out, George Zimmerman tutor's class. Oh, George Zimmerman. Oh, he went to bat for a homeless black man who got his ass whipped by a police officer. Police officer's son. Pardon, a police officer's son. He was going to the black community and going to black churches trying to get them to help him rally against the police department to stop racism and bias within the community and the court system. Oh,
and that, the new Black Panthers dead.
Where were they? Where were they? They were nowhere. George Zimmerman was doing the job of the Black Panther Party, the Al Sharpton's, the Jesse Jackson's, and when it came out, they were silent.
You know, at the end of the day, there are two types of people when it comes to weapons and using them. There's the person that buys the weapon, and Edward touched on this, that will never use the weapon, but they have this false sense of security, so they carry it around with them. Then there's the person who owns the weapon, knows how to use it, and already knows exactly what they're going to do with that weapon in a certain situation, and they generally kill people in those situations. Here's the bottom line. We do not know, at the end of the day, what Zimmerman's mindset was in terms of, if I need to pull this gun, am I prepared to use it? And that's the only part that I keep questioning. Have intention if he felt threatened. If he felt threatened to use it. And was there a part of him that could have de-escalated this by drawing out early, telling the kid to freeze, or not following, waiting till the cops got there? Or was there part of him all along that was angry enough to keep this thing just brewing long enough until it got to the point where he had no choice and he shot the gun?
Okay, but Sal, with those three scenarios, the kid, you know, I'm sure that in hindsight, he wishes to God that he drew that weapon from the beginning, now knowing that Trayvon was not armed. I'm sure that he wishes to God that he had drew that weapon and just said freeze or whatever, made a citizen arrest, whatever. I'm sure that he wishes that, but you can't go back.
He wishes his ass would have stayed at that damn at the mailboxes.
And hey, I don't think that he could have made that decision. He probably did think about. I've been in possession of a gun, and I'm just like, you know, I don't know if I feel safer with this gun or if I feel more in danger with this gun, because if it really comes down to it, sure, I have this gun, but am I going to be able to use it, or is somebody going to get it from me and shoot me with it, you know? It's like, what the hell? Because I'm not trained on how to use a gun. I've never, you know, shot anything other than a BB gun.
Hey, I've got a question for Mike. Will you get a second?
Go ahead. Sure. Go ahead.
Do you know if in Florida that if brandishing a firearm is illegal? Because George Zimmerman did not have a legal choice to draw his weapon on a kid and tell him, you know, freeze and
arrest. Yeah, interesting
brandishing,
question. I didn't think of that.
Brandishing is a weird thing. I don't know the ins and outs of it, but I think that brandishing is just, you know, you pull your gun out and wave it around. I don't know if it goes to a situation like this, where you drew your firearm to de-escalate a situation. I don't know if this would have met the legal, just the legal definition of brandishing.
Or maybe not even draw the firearm, but maybe he could have just showed that he had it. Like, hey.
What would be the legal ramifications behind it? Because that's an interesting question. Because let's say that let's go with my scenario here, because I've been indulging JC in his scenario all night. But let me indulge this. The kid walks up to him. And let's say he's being aggressive. Trayvon's being aggressive. Yo, what the F you doing here? What's your mother effing problem? You know what I'm saying? He's starting to approach him. George Zimmerman reaches back, shows the weapon, and grabs his holster, and he says, listen, stand down. I have a weapon. The cops are on their way. Get on your knees. Right? The kid
keeps coming
towards him, and he pulls out the weapon. He clocks it once. He pulled it back once. Pulls it back, and he says, I said, get on the ground, please. Right? And he keeps coming for him, and then finally says, "I F it." Bam.
Okay, look, I don't think
in that situation he has the legal right to restrict his movement. He could tell him, back up, get away from me, but he doesn't have the right to tell him, get on your knees, don't go anywhere, because at that point, Trayvon was not committing any crimes.
Right,
and he wasn't running
crime.
Away from crime.
I googled the term. I googled the term Florida brandishing.
Okay.
And it brings you to a website run by an attorney. It's called FloridaFirearmsLaw.com. And this attorney says that improper exhibition of a firearm are crimes governed by Florida Statute 790.10. This statute is titled as Improper Exhibition of Dangerous Weapons or Firearms, and it states, quote, if any person having or carrying any weapon shall in the presence of one or more persons exhibit the same in a rude, careless, angry, or threatening manner, not in necessary self-defense, the person so offending shall be guilty of a misdemeanor of the first degree. But then you read a little further, and the lawyer says that he's a lawyer who's handled quite a few gun-related charges. The statute is most often applied as a lesser and or alternate charge to aggravated assault.
Oh, right, right, right. Okay, that would be aggravated assault because you're using it in essence to threaten the person.
Yeah.
Right.
But if it's
in conjunction
with self-defense, then it's not brandishing.
Right. So in essence, it wouldn't have been if Trayvon's coming at him and he continues to come at him and he grabs the weapon. First, he grabs the holster and says, "Stand down, I have a weapon." He continues to come at him and he pulls the weapon out. In essence, he still couldn't be charged. This is all self-defense.
Yeah. Exactly.
And so at that point, if Trayvon Martin punches him in the face. And I blast that ass, real simple, then that's it.
But truthfully, man, almost nobody, when confronted with a firearm, continues their aggression. That's like some stuff you see in the movies. When most people see a gun, they crap their pants. Doesn't matter if it's a 44 Magnum or a 22. Nobody wants to get shot.
Right, exactly. Trayvon, that's my whole thing. If Trayvon would have seen that gun, I don't believe that he would have. I believe that right then and there he would have backed down and said, "Oh,
of course he would have.
I think he would have backed down."
But Trayvon, but Zimmerman, I think was too afraid to.
I think he was
brandish fun. That gun.
Especially with the way that sweet truck was rolling it around.
You're totally right, Mary. He was soft.
Right. He was scared. You're absolutely right.
You know, because at that moment, when you are a gun owner and you're confronted at that moment and you're in that situation at that moment, what do you really do? I mean, where do you go from there? If you pull out and this other person pulls out, shut up.
Well, look, here's the thing. Once that firearm, once that gun clears your holster, there's no, I'm thinking about shooting this guy. You draw and fire.
Yeah, there's no coming back from that. There's no coming back from that if the other person is also armed and they draw their weapon.
Right.
There's no coming back from that.
You just gotta get off
the pot. You know,
he's saying that he was afraid to draw, and I think we're stretching, we're taking a big stretch there. He's afraid to draw.
I happen to agree with this scenario. He had to have been afraid to pull his weapon. There are plenty of situations where George Zimmerman never pulls the weapon
because he has no reason to.
Well, even when he's punched in the face.
No, at that point, he does kill him.
But no. When he's punched in the face, he doesn't. No, he doesn't. He doesn't pull out his weapon when he's punched in the face. He pulls his weapon after they're wrestling on the ground. Trayvon gets on top of him, has the advantage, and continues to punch him and bash him on the head. Now, that could have happened in a matter of seconds. But when he's scooching down, trying to get him...
No, it couldn't have happened in a matter of seconds because...
Well, a minute or two.
No, it was 2 minutes.
That's right, 2 minutes.
It was a four-minute phone call.
2 minutes, right.
From the witness.
Right, the witness who's on the phone for 2 minutes. Yeah,
so
exactly.
The scuffle had to have been taking place
for two or better minutes before
any gun was drawn and anyone was shot.
Exactly.
So it was a scuffle going on for 2 minutes or longer.
And this gun could have gone off long before then. Because that punch, you don't know if he's got
the ability to draw the weapon on that punch. And once you're on the ground with somebody, a 2-minute struggle
there's a lot of jostling in position. You're trying to
Absolutely.
Block blows. 2 minutes is not a long time. It's
two
quite
minutes
possible
is,
that he didn't have the ability to draw that gun prior.
That's two-thirds of a UFC round.
Correct.
Yeah, but you know,
that's
wait,
a
guys,
long time.
I'm going to take
that's
wait,
a long
wait,
time to get your ass with.
Two minutes or more is a long time to be taking an ass with it.
Wait, guys, hold on.
That's
I want
to
take you back.
Half of that is
guys,
grappling,
I
want to
take you
pushing.
Back to something. Hold on for a second, Sal. Real quick, I want to take you back to something. Sal, let you make your point. I want to take you back to something. You guys remember the Sean Bell case in Queens? Are you guys familiar with that? I'm sure.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Sean Bell was shot by three police officers. One police officer fired 31 rounds. One police officer fired 31 rounds, okay, with a police issue weapon. A 9mm that carries 17 shots. 17. He fired 31 rounds. In the course of 2 minutes, 2.5 minutes to be exact, he was able to unload his gun, reload, and fire again.
And,
31 rounds,
and
folks.
Unload that one.
Well,
okay.
Look, dude, I will tell
one.
You.
Say again?
I can do a magazine dump on my Glock that carries 17 rounds. And reload and dump again in about 4.5 seconds.
That's what I'm saying.
That's not even pushing it.
But everyone was upset about the Sean Bell case because they said they couldn't believe that one officer was able to fire 31 rounds in one sitting in the manner that he did. So, again, and of course those officers
well,
were never
why
charged.
Would unload
yeah,
way.
Well, of course, but the officer was never charged. Officer went through a bureau review, never charged, and they said that the shooting was justified.
Yeah. So why and it was not justified.
Sure it was. It was justified.
Sure.
It was absolutely.
End of the day, the officer's got to go home to his family.
Yeah. And again, that's why I brought up the Sean Bell thing. Was the bottom line
was that the guy that was supposed to get married?
Yeah, that's right. The next day.
Yeah. He wasn't armed.
It was he wasn't, but it was a justified shooting. I'll explain it to you. Sal, what was your last point? I apologize.
No, the only point I make, and I still hold to, I'm not quite convinced that he was in fear, George Zimmerman, of his life until the point where this beatdown starts to occur. At that point, clearly, I think he realizes he's getting the worst of it, and he pulls the gun. But there is not going to be a conviction here, but I think there is something to be said for the fact that Zimmerman had to be pissed off, and he pursued, and this happened. At some point, you can't charge him for that.
I don't disagree with you. I think that until the moment he was on that ground and getting his ass beat, did he at that point think about it's either this kid's life or my life, and I've got to pull out, and I've got to do what I've got to do to save myself? And at that point, that's self-defense. You know, I'm not saying that he was angry about everything. I don't think, you know, he probably was. You know, we can go into the whole psychological thing, but the physical facts are the physical facts, and the physical facts are that he was getting his ass beat. Getting his head beaten into the ground. He didn't know what was about to happen next. Before Trayvon got a hold of his gun, because Zimmerman said he thought that the kid saw his gun. And he knew probably at that moment, once he thought that Trayvon saw that gun, that he was going to have to pull out. He was going to have to use that gun on Trayvon before Trayvon used it on him.
It's interesting in the middle of a struggle that he can determine where this kid's eyes were.
He can determine where his eyes were?
Well, he said he saw him look at my gun.
According to Zimmerman, he saw the gun, reached for it, and said, "You're going to die then."
Really? Okay, yeah. I mean,
folks, thank you as well. Sally D., Edward in Connecticut, Poverty Supreme. I'm sorry we didn't get to you tonight, man. I know you called in. And, of course, our good friend White Mike for JC. Mary, Mary, why you bugging? I'm Reese on the radio, folks. We'll be back tomorrow. We've got to talk about the former Microsoft executive that's going to open up a marijuana plant tomorrow. So, Mike, you better be here.
Where is that happening at?
Mike, you better be here tomorrow.
Where is that happening at? Boy.
In Washington State. Mike, you there?
In Washington State.
Oh, yeah. I'll be there.
You better be here because we've got to talk about it.
Mike. Start checking Washington State out. We're moving.
Colorado, baby. That's the place to go. Rocky Mountain High.
We'll see you guys tomorrow. It's Reese on the Radio. We'll see you tomorrow. Same bad time, same bad channel.
Reese on the Radio is thinking about relocating everyone.
Oh, hell no.